So it was about a few months ago that I found a spider in my basement. And I walked up to him and I said, hey, what are you doing in my basement, man? And I felt like his name was Charles. And I was like, Charles, what's good, bro? Why are you in my basement right now? I was like, you know, this is not your home, man. It's my place. I don't know enough about y'all to feel comfortable with you living in my house. But I said, look, Charles, I'll take you to my garage. You can live in my garage. You're my homie now. You just chill in my garage. So I got a cup and a little coaster, and I put him in the cup. He just went right into it. And I took him out to my garage. I sat him down on the table. I said, Charles, you good, man? Is everything cool? Is this all right for you, man? And he was like, yeah, this is great. Thank you. You know, this is awesome. And I was like, Charles, just hang out, man. Do your thing. Do your thing. And so that was a few months ago. And now I'm here with Charles. He is 3 foot wide and about 4.5 foot long. Hairy motherfucker. Good Lord. But I'm proud of him. He's here. He's a great, great fella. Charles, why don't you go ahead and say hello?
Hello. My name is Charles. I am a spider of a very rare species. In fact, I'm an alien. My species exists on a different planet several thousand light years away. And I was unfortunately transported here on accident, in fact. But I'm here. I'm friendly. I'm not mad about it. You know, life is life, and I'm here. So, yeah, God, you know, and I'm thankful to James here for helping me out, you know.
Oh, thanks.
That's just the way the world works,
sure.
You know, and I try to do the best I can to be a good, what you call a spider, but I'm not quite a spider. In fact, my race's name is, and my species is known as, and to be frank, you know, I'm just glad to be here, because on my planet, there are much larger, much bigger species of my kind, and they are very ravenous and murderous. And I'll tell you, I am somewhat of a prodigy. Our species lives for eons. And I was born in a time when it was possible to create immense technological advancement. And I designed a machine to create a portal to a new world. And by golly, I did it. I went right to a new world. And James, you saved me. Thank you, James.
Oh, man. No, it's just a thing that I do. I just save these small creatures. You know what I mean? I try to make sure that, because you think about it, right? Here I am. I'm a human being. And you see these, you know, I'm just immense.
Right.
I am enormous compared to when I first found you, Charles. You were so... You know, you were so helpless.
Mm-hmm.
And you sat there and I said, Charles, I got your back, man.
Yes.
And I try to do that because I feel like the power to smite, you know, creatures of your size is such an otherworldly sensation, because nothing can do that to me.
Yes.
Save for some animals I'll never see. But you know what I mean, Charles.
I do.
You know what I mean.
Yes, yes.
But Charles, I thank you. I really do thank you.
No, it's not a problem.
For being here today, because I know you're out doing your thing, you know, trying to solve the world's problems with your superior alien intellect.
Oh, stop it.
And, you know, blessing us with your presence here. And I appreciate you, Charles. So I just want to, you know, dive into a little bit of labor history, talk about the
yes.
GM UAW, the formation of the UAW, really, from the Flint labor strike, the sit-down strike. We're gonna cover that today. Charles, I thank you for joining us. I know you've got other things to do. I look forward to hearing from you again.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
And I'm sorry your English translator was starting to fluctuate there. I you know, you built it, and it doesn't, I'm gonna be honest with you, it doesn't deploy very well over FL Studio.
Bloody hell. I know we'll have to fix that soon. I'll figure it out, James. I promise.
Yeah, and we'll figure it out, you know, because it's just a neural pathway kind of thing. You know what I mean? I think we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, you know, at least we can understand you. I know your accent fluctuates and it's strange, but people, I think, will get maybe used to it, or they'll just have to forgive us for that.
Indeed.
But Charles, like, once again, thank you. Thank you, man, for showing up. I really appreciate you being here.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Enjoy your time.
It's been a pleasure, James.
Say
thank
hello
you.
To the wife and kids.
Will do. Will do.
Peace.
Namaste.
And that was my interview with a good friend of mine, Charles, the intergalactic space alien spider creature that I rescued in my basement a few months ago. But like I mentioned, we're going to move on with the Motion of the Movement series on the Ragtag Handy Dandy Bullshit Show now.
These were days when history changed its course. The sit-down strikes began on December 30th. They began with the attempt of GM to move the dies at Fisher No. 1, the Grand Rapids, and elsewhere.
On January the 4th, the union submitted a complete list of grievances. We asked for a national General Motors agreement, for day rates and the abolition of the hated piecework system, for seniority, for recognition of the union, for control of speed-up, for grievance procedures, for the reinstatement of all the men who had been fired for union activity, and for a 30-hour week. GM said no to everything. Widely separated workers, workers who didn't know each other, workers who didn't know each other's names, men who had been divided, weak and oppressed, came together in union and in solidarity.
Where the workers were sitting in, had become a stage which the workers of the world, wherever they were watching intently. Extra editions of papers came out on Flint developments in Paris, in Rome, in London, Calcutta, Buenos Aires.
Well, the men stayed, but the women had to go out. We couldn't stay.
They're threatening, their wives are threatening to divorce them, or they want them home, and the guys want to get home, naturally.
I know there's one guy that had five kids, and he gets so nervous, he pass out because he had five kids and he didn't know if he was going to get a job or not.
It was a bitter winter in January. Flint was the Valley Forge of the people who work in the plants. These were times when the summer soldiers fell away and the winter soldiers stood up in a terrible trial. Armchair generals and colonels were demanding that the National Guardsmen go into those plants and shoot the sit-downers out. But for once, the National Guard truly maintained law and order. The strikers were disciplined, but the Flint City government was the General Motors government after all, and General Motors insisted, so the police tried to evict the sit-downers. This is the end of the Battle of Bull's Run. The attempt to end the sit-down strike in tear gas and blood, as if it were a kind of 13th century peasants' revolt, failed. There were casualties. They are breaking these windows to let the air in and to let the tear gas out.
We didn't know what was going to happen. And then, of course, when the National Guard was called out, we were scared to death that they were going to maybe shoot down the workers, the strikers. But it didn't. We had a good governor, and he sent the National Guard in to protect them.
We will work our way out of this strike peacefully and without injustice to anyone. And I am confident that after it's all over with, there will be a better understanding between employer and employee. And better still, I hope that conditions will be improved under which men and women labor and live.
reached their climax at the beginning of February. Governor Murphy had been in office just 1 month. General Motors had tried everything, spies and intimidation. GM had taken its case to court before a judge who was a GM stockholder. The corporation had applied pressure on Governor Murphy. It had tried evicting the strikers by force. But not for a moment did the discipline of the strikers waver. Their wives and their children came to the factory windows. The troops, there to maintain order, not to shoot strikers, bivouacked in the streets.
The strike came to an end on February 11th, 1937. Governor Murphy announced the settlement terms. For a period of 6 months, General Motors would not, without the governor's permission, deal with any employee spokesman except the UAW and the 17 plants that had been struck. In the other plants, the union would be dealt with as representatives for its own members. No discrimination against union people. All strikers would be rehired. Union members could talk about the union during lunch and rest periods. All court proceedings against the union and its members to end. The company would begin to negotiate with the union in good faith. It was a magnificent and historic victory.
It's how I'm feeling. Do some spoken word. Check it. Yo,
sad guru.
As the laborers of the American modernity, we are the bearers of a critical responsibility. We have proof that our solidarity, when applied at the right pressure points, has generated more fulfilling outcomes for the exploited. Even though our current working conditions are the gift of those who fought and died for what little balance between work and life that we have now. You see? And our innate right as the means of production incarnate is to build the new vision of working conditions for the modern world and our future. Because the children of the future generations of this country are the sole victims of any hesitance or inaction today. Yeah. See, we can no longer be distracted by the circus of the rich and the commercialism of the empire. We can no longer allow them to exploit our value and undermine our lives for their enrichment, because our power lies in our differences. Its premise is granted by our sheer numbers. We are the force that drives the world in total. And the owners are the vestiges of oligarchy and the gatekeepers of choice. And see, we are the hand that feeds them what they need to survive. The mutuality of that exchange is an illusion. 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 We only receive what we're allowed to receive, because we're the expendable recess, just like toiletries. A cost that is figured into business expense. We're expendable. But we facilitate their processes for them. And they in turn grant us the ability to survive in the system that they own? Is there a more inhuman and destructive system to burden our future generations with? The exchange between owner and worker, that for without the worker is denied healthcare, food, shelter, community, and life. The consumption of a worker's life and extraction of their labor for the enrichment of the ownership class must be stopped at all costs. The struggle, as it were, in our ancestors' labor era has been relieved to be a more comfortable state, and the oppression and exploitation of our ancestors' working conditions far surpass our own in many ways. But we are still yet confined to the equation, the fundamental capitalistic arithmetic of work or die. Work or die. Our
choice is obvious and clearly defined. The workers of America must be the architects of the parameters of future working conditions. Yo, American workers of all kinds and all professions must conceive of a broad approach that centrally focuses on the elimination of the work for life snare that all workers are struggling to release from and have been from the dawn of the capitalist empire. But now we're equipped, now more than ever before, with the communication tools, the educational resources, and the financial platforms all in our pockets to shape the labor conditions of America in ways that our ancestors could never dream of. And I know the problems are unique and multifaceted, compounded by the most powerful and nefarious agents of the world, and a system born hundreds of years ago. A system that has slaughtered countless lives, children, men, women, animals, families, humans, workers, to take our existence and whittle it down to a series of motions that are void of any authentic purpose other than the necessity to survive. Though we've been given the means to cope, to rectify, to add an addendum to the formula of work or die, a truly mountainous hurdle to overcome in our journey towards the completion of our ancestors' struggle exists. Our trinkets. Yep. Because through the post-war era, we've been inundated with what can only be described as a seemingly infinite quantity of goods and services, with the ability to be acquired in as little time and resistance as possible. Damn. But see, these functions of the system of capitalism in our modern technocratic ethos undermine and detract from the undergirding exploitation inherent in the system itself. Production, advertisement, valuation, purchase, and commodification of nearly everything the eye can see has blinded the American worker. It has placed blinders on the sides of the beast of labor, the gargantuan steed that is the American workforce in its totality. It has occupied the working family of modernity with nearly useless pursuits, subverting their worth, stability, wherewithal in the process. And so the American worker, in order to complete the evolution of the laboring ancestors' war, is the sole bearer of many responsibilities, but chief among them this. The American worker must realize and act accordingly to the truth that they have been trapped in a mist, a haze of commercialization and commodification. They have been the victims of a calculated matrix of schemes that have subdued them in total and subjugated their humanity for profit. And this enlightenment will invariably have a cascading effect on the American worker psyche. It will transform the fundamentally capitalistic perceptions that safeguard the rampant commercialization and commodity economies. You see, because American workers will realize that humankind's natural system of consumption has been exploited and used to fill a void that exists solely because of the inability to escape the work or die parameters. Damn. The dematerialization of the American worker psyche is the most vital component of the war for life. It must be done. 'cause it is the initial flashpoint from which the evolution into communism will take place. And once the American worker devalues commodities, denounces technologies, and at large wins political power, then the beginning of a structure of labor that benefits all can blossom. A world where you don't work a single day in your life. Yeah. But not 'cause you're not active though, but because the American worker is given not an infinite amount of things to own, but an infinite amount of things to do. Every machine has cogs. Every ecosystem has inhabitants. And the true equalization of labor in total is the freedom to choose what you will do and how you will do it and when you will do it, and not for one man and not for one woman, but for your community and your people. And you will be supported and strengthened by solidarity and union amongst one another. Then commodity will be moot. Then commodity will be once again unique. Then art will be authentic. Then needs will be met in total. Then excess will be scorned. Crime will be counterintuitive. What would I steal that I couldn't just make or acquire? Who would I hurt when I have my needs met and my community is my family? Who? Why? Illness is ruthless and has no place to grow because health is equally available. Damn. Is clean and available everywhere for free. Workers live, not work to live. Workers live to work, not work to live. Workers live to work, not work to live. Because it is true that when you are invested in what you do, you're doing it in the moment fully, and it gives you a prolonged sense of joy. It no longer exists as work. It no longer exists as work. It no longer exists as work.
Well, thanks for joining us on the Ragtag Handy Dandy Bullshit Show. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you all. I'd love to do a fucking outro today. I appreciate all of you. I hope you enjoy my content. Check out patreon.com/condepress. I appreciate you. I appreciate you. It's totally up to you if you want to or not. Just a guy trying to get along, man. Just trying to do what he loves and make a living. And make a living doing what you love. Choose what you want to do. Work. But work on your terms. I love everybody. Big deuces. Peace out.